Yeah, my Zoom.
Okay. Here we go. So it is, what time is it? 4:06. And I'd like to call the May 11th Environmental Services Advisory Committee meeting to order. Roll call. Fred Ariza.
Here.
Brian Thomas is not here. Margo Garcia. She'll be signing on soon. Michael Harrier.
Here.
Trevor Ledbetter.
Here.
Susanna Shippers.
Here.
Okay, and do we have Elvira Suarez Din? No, okay.
Hello?
Yeah. Oh,
sorry, I am here.
Okay, good. I don't know, we're having techno problems today, huh? Okay, so we've gone through item one. For item two, for the chairperson's report, all I was gonna tell you was the quorum change. So now you know. Carlos has to leave early, and so he's going to jump in now with the director's report. Ready to go?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Accommodated my request. So two items. Just want to give you a brief update on the Los Reales Sustainability Campus open house. We held that on May 6th. So we staff really did an excellent job, not only like Christina, Brittany, folks here in the office, the landfill staff really over prepared really for the event. We were hoping to get a better turnout. We sent a mail out to over 3,000 residents, but I believe we only got 4 to 5 residents. I think the comments that we received were very well taken. I think they were very good comments, very appreciative of really our efforts and really trying to communicate to them in terms of some of the efforts that are underway at Los Reales, not only in terms of really the current work that is going on right now with the landfill, it's lining cell 4B, really working up on top in terms of the landfill, but also really moving forward with really doing the plan area development amendment. And then also, and that requires a lot of open hearings. And that's really what would be, that was the purpose of really this open house, was really a preamble really for that, for those meetings that will be held in the future related to the plan area amendment. And then the other one would be as soon as that is, it's approved, then we have to go to a facility plan amendment. And so that's also is going to require a lot of public outreach. So we wanted the public to be aware, especially neighbors around us, in terms of what we were thinking. And again, not a very good turnout, very well received though, got some good comments, got some good feedback, pretty much no negative commentary. Most of it was very enthused in terms of really the landscaping buffer that is being proposed on the eastern side of the landfill, and also the proposed improvements of the landscaping buffer, pretty much the first phase on the northern side of the boundary. So that was basically the update on that open house. I thought I would be giving you, hey, you know what, we had over 300 people, but that's not the case, but it was a really good event. It gave us an opportunity really to listen to residents and also really to be prepared for future public meetings that will be related to this facility. So that's
I have a question. Out of the 3 or 4 people that were there, were they residents who live nearby the facility, or were they just kind of all over the place?
Actually, there were residents that lived nearby that essentially their backyard essentially is up against the Los Reales fence. And so they were very interested in terms of what was going on. They know exactly what we're doing. They know our operations. They can even count the number of times that we go by their property to secure the fence. So they're very familiar with what we do. So they provided some good feedback on what they're seeing and what they would like to see down the road.
Good. And then we did see a video.
Hmm?
Yeah. Yes. I hope everybody had a chance to look at that. Okay. Any questions for Carlos?
Which video was this?
Oh, from the sustainability, the tree nursery.
Okay, that we saw.
Yeah.
Nothing from this open house.
No.
Okay. Let's see. Congress and Nearmount Landfill Reclamation Project.
Maybe most of you that were in the previous, maybe listening to the previous council meetings, there was an item that essentially the mayor and council are considering the transfer of property, city-owned property, commonly known as the Congress and Nearmount Landfill, more specifically the Congress Landfill, is essentially being proposed to be transferred to the Tohono O'odham Nation. So Brittany, I don't know if you can maybe bring up that map just to give us an idea of kind of a reference point. So if we look at the image, you'll see where essentially the building is obviously Caterpillar. That's a Caterpillar site. The area south of that or just below that, that is essentially what is commonly known as a Congress Landfill. So all that area essentially in green, that is essentially that area that is tentatively being proposed to be sent or be given or donated to the Tohono O'odham Nation. And that really encompasses essentially the Congress Landfill, not only the landfill itself, but additional right of way and additional city property to the west. So you'll see kind of a line going up and down kind of on the western side or to the left of the image. That is Brooklyn Lane. So that's they're going to abandon the right of way and they're going to incorporate as part of that donation too as well. So that area, all that green area was considered to be the Tucson Origins site, historical site. So that's, again, that's the area that is being proposed to be transferred or donated to the TO Nation. The area up above to in orange, that is commonly known as a Nearmount Landfill. So the city will retain ownership of that land. We as a department, we cleaned both sites the best we could. We didn't touch a lot of the historical area, but essentially all that area has been reclaimed, has been cleaned, and essentially is ready for in any future development. So that's on the works. One of the things that essentially occurred as part of that transfer, and I think Priscilla Lane from the Business Services Department is here also, and she'll provide an overview of the financial report, is there was a transfer from the general fund to the tune of $8.4 million to the Environmental Services Fund as part of this transaction. So I know you always had been concerned about, if we invested all those dollars, the intent of that was for Mayor and Council really to transfer those expenses back to the department. And I believe that has been done. So just wanted to communicate that to you and provide you that update. Essentially was the transfer was $8.4 million. We owed some money really to the general fund from essentially our risk fund was a little bit low. So they deducted whatever we owed to that fund, $1.3 million. So you'll see in the financials, a net transfer to the general fund of $7.1 million. But in a sense, in reality, the department or the fund really got their essentially money back for doing the reclamation work in that area. So just want to report that to you. I think those are good news. And I think it really gives us more of a financial stability moving forward, especially that we have a very high capital intensive project this year, lining cell 4B, that is going to really help out and really maintain our balances.
They're all the little on to the left of the Greens R2 zone are all kinds of small lots, look like zone for residential. Those will also go to the Tohono O'odham.
Ms. Margo, I believe that is the case, yes.
So that's the right of way you're talking about being given up?
So immediately to the right of those lots, there is a north and south roadway, which is Brick Lane. That's going to be part of that as well. So there's going to be cleanup of city properties, various properties, both city-owned property per se or platted land, and essentially including those little lots, and then the right of way, which is the old Brick Lane Road. Mm-hmm.
Was there, Carlos, was there any response from the people who do the what's the name of that that place by the where they have the
Mission Gardens.
The Mission Gardens, because I think there's a move by some people to want to rebuild or reconstruct the old Convento that was there.
Yeah.
And that's the same site as where the Convento used to be.
Yep.
It would be on the, actually the south side of that lot.
I haven't heard any communication from them, from Mission Gardens. Maybe they have communicated that to mayor and council, or maybe the city manager's office. But to us, we haven't been involved in any communication to that effect.
Okay.
And I think I heard that Mission Gardens is actually county land. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in this green area per se, because it's off of, I was trying to find where it is exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't show on the map. It's actually it's lower. It's actually a little bit lower than each other, and to the left, basically abutting Grant or Grande Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's not shown in this image.
So, Carlos, I have a question. Are we going to retain any liability should something happen, because we cleaned it? But if something turns up, are we going to be responsible for it?
That's what they're working on. That I think we provided enough evidence that we cleaned the best we could. There's no guarantee that something else could have been left in there, and that's really what essentially the attorneys are working through, that really to provide that language, both for our I would say security, as well as the security for the folks that may be receiving that land. So I haven't seen those agreements yet, and those are barely being developed at this time. But most likely, just like any, we know that we essentially own the land. We did our best effort in cleaning it up. And if you look at environmental regulations, yeah, always the generator essentially is the responsible party for that. So ultimately, I don't think the liability will ever go away.
Okay.
And that could be a really bad thing for us.
I think the risk is minimal. I think we took care of a lot of the stuff out there. I think there may be some pockets here and there of waste that we probably just couldn't get to because of the historical area. But I think they're very minimal. I think we're to the point that maybe we're looking at abandoning pretty much all of our gas monitoring systems in the area. There's really we could just really move forward on really no longer classify that area as a landfill. So there's a lot of stuff that we still need to do really to close that up. But I think the risk is, I'm not saying it completely goes away. There is some risk, but I think the risk is somewhat manageable and somewhat minimal.
Right, but I guess my question, the bigger question is, since the city is the one deciding they're gonna gift the land back to, you know, the tribe, which is, you know, very admirable and stuff, is the city gonna assume that risk? Because they're the ones that are doing it.
Yeah.
I think we are. Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't think the liability for operating a landfill in that land, that liability does not go, the city cannot walk away from that liability.
And it doesn't go to ES, it goes to the city as a whole.
That was my question, Margo, is it going to go to the city or to the ESGS?
It goes to the city.
Okay.
Because they're the overall arching owners. So.
Any other questions for Carlos? Is that all, Carlos?
Sure. If you don't mind me just jumping on the next item, which is the zero waste roadmap.
Okay. I didn't know if you were covering that. Good. Okay.
Just a brief overview on that. We have essentially submitted those documents. Hopefully you have received a copy. If not, we'll send you a copy of the final draft and the exhibits associated with that. It's going to be placed on the agenda for the May 23rd council meeting for adoption, and it's under the consent agenda. So just that will be the final, I would say, planning or the final stage on really adopting the planning document for us to really get moving with some of the initiatives are underway.
Any questions? Okay. Well, Carlos.
Thank you.
We'll see you next month.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to try to listen in for a few minutes. Priscilla Lane from the Business Services Department and Maggie Crows from also the new finance manager are here really to present the financial information. So if there's any other questions, obviously they got their ducks in a row, but if there's any questions for me, I'll try to listen in, but I'm going to be on the road. So thank you for accommodating me, and we see you next month.
No distraction.
Okay. Okay. And we also have Jasmine Chan here as our guest speaker on the for the Plan Tucson discussion and what ESAC's role might be. So I promised she could go next. And thank you for showing up, Jasmine.
For sure. Many thanks to ESAC for having me this afternoon. I'm going to share my screen. I have a presentation on kind of what we're doing with the Plan Tucson update, and then also kind of what role we're hoping ESAC can take as a part of this update process. To introduce kind of the folks who have been working on Plan Tucson very closely, we've got myself, I'm the project manager for the Plan Tucson update. And we have Amanda Smith, a lead planner with Planning and Development Services, as well as Ian Wan, recently became a lead planner with Planning and Development Services as well. In addition, we have Gordley Group, the kind of marketing branding side of everything you see related to Plan Tucson is produced by them. And then Southwest Decision Resources, they are a facilitation firm. So they are helping us with designing what our meetings look like, what do our like workshops, what kind of information do we need to carry? How do we message the information that we are seeking through this process? All this to say, there are very few people who are listed on this slide, and there are many, many, many more people who have been contributing already. This includes our different city departments, other folks within our Planning and Development Services Department, as well as many members of our community who have already engaged with our first phase of Plan Tucson. Oh, okay, so to give an overview of what I'm going to cover, I'm going to talk about what Plan Tucson is, talk about what the update process looks like, and then spend most of the time talking about working groups, because that's where we are hoping for engagement with ESAC. Why I can't flip forward with my keyboard. Okay. What is Plan Tucson? So Plan Tucson is actually a document that was adopted by our voters in 2013. So this is a general plan, general and sustainability plan for the city of Tucson. It works towards a thriving, sustainable Tucson through goals and policies that are arranged into four different focus areas. These are the social environment, the economic environment, the natural environment, as well as the built environment. It informs and is informed by development, zoning, neighborhood and area plans, contemporary visioning and planning efforts. So Plan Tucson 2013, for those of you who have participated, is partly based off of the visioning work that Southwest Decision Resources helped to lead for Imagine Greater Tucson. That was a process that concluded in 2011, kind of setting forward what the visions for this region look like as the city of Tucson and also Pima County started on their kind of general and comprehensive planning efforts. So Plan Tucson 2013 had 64 public meetings, 5 public hearings with Planning Commission, 1 public hearing with Mayor and Council, and 1 special election, as well as many other kind of meetings with different committees and different individuals across the city of Tucson. So the different environments that I was explaining earlier, just to give you a sense of what's kind of included in all of those, in the social environment, we've got housing, public safety, parks and recreation, arts and culture, public health, urban agriculture, education, and governance and participation. Under the economic environment, we have jobs and workforce development, business climate, regional and global positioning, and tourism and quality of life. In the natural environment, we have energy and climate readiness, water resources, green infrastructure, and environmental quality. And in our fourth environment, the built environment, we have historic preservation, public infrastructure, facilities, and cost of development, redevelopment and revitalization, as well as land use, transportation, and urban design. So, you know, the Plan Tucson 2013 is organized by environments, has focus areas, includes different goals for each of these focus areas and different policies that are related to kind of how do you interpret the direction that we need to go as a city. So here we are today. We have started the update process because we need to update our general plan every 10 years per state statute. And we've actually been leaning a whole lot on existing plans that have been kind of either currently active or have been recently adopted by our mayor and council in the last 3 to 5 years or so. So really looking to these other citywide or very important planning processes that have been happening in Tucson to understand, you know, where are we at today? How does Plan Tucson 2013 fit into that picture? And whether or not we need to be updating substantially or if there are many things that are carrying over based off of what we're hearing kind of more currently than we did back in 2011. And the roadmap for this process itself is, you know, we're early 2023, so we're kind of that first phase. We're in the transition point currently between phase one and phase two. So phase one was a whole lot of community listening and discovery, hearing kind of what do people like, what are people concerned about, and any ideas that people have for what the future of Tucson should include. We're going to take all of that information and then move into our phase two, where we're drafting our goals, policies, and future growth scenarios for the city of Tucson. So this includes convening working groups to really have those more detailed discussions around what policies might need to be refined, what policies are missing, what policies maybe need to be advanced to where are we going next, right? Maybe we've accomplished one of these policies and we say, okay, what's our next step that we have to point to? So looking for that, looking forward to that conversation all happening. That'll start in August timeframe with those working groups and then go for probably 9 months or so. And then phase two ends, we're targeting summer of 2024. And that has a preliminary draft of Plan Tucson. So that has our draft policies, draft goals, our kind of draft future growth, preferred future growth scenario. And with that, we move into phase three, which is review and refine. So this is kind of an open comment period, as well as, you know, specifically designed public outreach around do these policies, do these goals, does this preferred future growth scenario match with where you think the city needs to go? Is it consistent with what we've been hearing and what we're reflecting back to you? And then once we kind of get into a final draft part of Plan Tucson update, we will then go into the public hearing process with both Planning Commission and then Mayor and Council. Phase three ends when Plan Tucson is adopted by Mayor and Council, and Mayor and Council says, yes, this is ready for voters to give us a determination if this is the next general plan indeed for the city of Tucson. We are targeting for that adoption in spring of 2025, leaving us, you know, quite a lot of time to be able to provide information and education about what is a general plan, what is included in this current update, and, you know, giving people the tools they need to decide whether they will vote yes or no on adopting Plan Tucson. I want to also share kind of how we are approaching this update process in terms of who's involved and what different people are kind of working on. So at the center of all of this are our community members. And that's through both our process directly and also through the other processes that have been ongoing at the city of Tucson. And then we've got 6 other groups that we've carved out. So planning team, that's the team that I'm leading. And then we have our interdepartmental team as well at the city, and also leaning on our city leadership to help provide guidance where we need that. The working groups that I mentioned before, helping to organize the key topics of the plan. We have regional partners, so not only Pima County, but then also major employers in the area, including the University of Arizona, Raytheon, Davis-Month, and Air Force Base. Our mayor and council are a very important part of what we're doing here, making sure that they are aware of the progress we're making, what we are hearing, and making sure we're kind of sharing all of that information with them. And then we have Planning Commission as well. They take a pretty big part in this process, as they do, they are responsible for hosting public hearings as well as making a recommendation to mayor and council. We have additional information about our community engagement program on our website. You can find our website at plantucson.org, and all of those documents are there if you'd like to read that. Our community engagement program was adopted by mayor and council in November of 2022, and just sets forth kind of what are our guiding principles for when how we approach engagement, what types of events we are looking to do, and what are our goals as it relates to how much we're hearing from folks. What are we going to set forth as expectations for ourselves as we embark on this process? So working groups, why I'm here today. So the purpose of working groups is to bring together folks to work together to take Plant Tucson to the next level and to actively help shape the future of Tucson. Working groups will also help identify and organize shared key topics based off of community and partner input to date. Working groups will also have folks involved with working groups will be contributing their knowledge and their experience to help align Plan Tucson with your work and what you've been hearing. And then it'll also, inform the decision-making process that we are going through in Tucson. Just to give an idea of the type of conversations we'll be having with the working groups. So we've got general plans here on the left side of the screen, where the content is really citywide in geography and in topic. It stays pretty general, right? Pretty high level. It is required by the state that we have general plans, and there are community engagement requirements that we have to follow, including specific types of information in the general plan, policies around specific areas. And then the role of the general plan is to set the community vision for the city, and includes goals and policies that support that vision. And it guides our policy decisions and resource decisions in the city for about the next 10 years. Depends on when things get updated, all of that, and adopted. And it's adopted by mayor and council and then voted on by the public. So we have another set of plans that's called specific plans. And usually we've split those into two areas. One is a neighborhood or an area plan, which is geographically specific. It's a much smaller area than the whole city. They are not a requirement from the state, but they are permitted. And we use them in ways to set community vision for a particular area. They also are meant to implement the goals of the general plan, and it informs land use processes such as rezoning, special exceptions, variances, et cetera. They may or may not be regularly updated. We have some neighborhood plans that were adopted in the 1980s. And then we have some that are adopted in 2022. So it kind of spans a really wide range here. But in this case, the adoption is really just goes to mayor and council. It does not also require either a vote from the community or a vote from that specific geographic area. And the other type of specific plan that we handle are departmental plans. So this includes Move Tucson, Tucson Resilient Together, other plans that are kind of more specific to topic areas. So these are citywide in geography, but they're really more specific to one topic area. These roles are to provide specifics in departmental operations, priorities, and also to implement the city's general plan. They also may or may not be regularly updated. That kind of depends on where the department's at and what do they need, as well as direction from mayor and council. And ultimately, the departmental plans are adopted by mayor and council. So just trying to highlight the different ways that these plans can interact with each other, but also the level of conversation that we're looking to have through the working groups on general plans. So to give an example of how feedback is incorporated, so for example, a comment that we might receive through our process is, my neighborhood park needs more Ramadas. A general plan policy, I guess the current plan Tucson 2013, has a couple of policies that might relate to this. And these are prioritize repairing, maintaining, and upgrading existing recreational facilities. And the other policy is ensure equitable distribution of recreational resources to reach all populations throughout the city and make them affordable to all. So these are, that's the level that the general plan operates. And then specific plans, in this case, most likely would be a departmental plan. You know, it would appear within the Parks and Recreation system-wide master plan as it relates to kind of amenities that are being sought for from the Parks and Rec system. And then also within the park's capital improvement plan for that specific park. It may also be included in a master planning process for that specific park. So kind of different ways to see how the plans are interacting with one another and how the implementation of the general plan policy really happens through the departmental specific plan. So working groups, we have five topic areas. The first is land use, development, and housing. The second is transportation, mobility, and access. The third is community resources. The fourth is water, climate, and green space. And the fifth is economic vitality. And it's our role as Plan Tucson staff to coordinate when the discussions intersect, because there are a lot of intersecting topic areas within each of these working groups. And that's part of our responsibility to bring those kind of cross-cutting topics together across those working groups. And then I want to provide a little bit more detail in the next slides around what types of subtopics are included in each of these working groups. So under land use, housing, and urban design, we've got land use trends. So talking about development patterns, sprawl, density, kind of where that's appropriate, where that's not appropriate. Transit-oriented development, mixed-use centers, talking about area and neighborhood plans, any annexations or infrastructure that are related there. We're also talking about housing, so that includes things like affordable housing, workforce housing, market rate housing, kind of on the more housing supply side of things. We will also be talking about neighborhoods. And then urban design, right? Like what are the aesthetics that we are aiming for the city of Tucson. Second group, transportation, mobility, and access. This covers, you know, complete streets network that's looking at our whole system for transportation. We'll lean very heavily on the Move Tucson planning process to inform this. Public transit, bicycle, pedestrian, and shared mobility infrastructure, streets, ADA accessibility, traffic safety, and stormwater management. Community resources will include community safety, generally community development, parks and recreation, support for unsheltered population, and then in roles that, you know, the city is more of a supportive partner than we are the initiator or lead in kind of these areas would be public health and education. These topics will also come up within community resources. Our fourth working group, water, climate, and green space, will include topics such as climate action, waste management, environmental quality, energy, water, urban green spaces, and regional green space to the extent that the city is a supportive partner. And our fifth group is economic vitality. We're including arts and culture, business climate, and then areas where the city is more of a supportive partner are jobs and workforce development, regional and global positioning, and tourism. So who should participate? Anyone working on any of these related topic areas. So for ESAC, most likely in that kind of water, climate, green space area, although there are certainly many other areas that the environmental services kind of touches among the other working group topics. So we'll have city staff that are involved, city boards and commission liaisons, interjurisdictional partners, organizational partners, stakeholder groups, and interested public. And we're anticipating timing, so starting in August and having 3 to 5 2-hour meetings over the course of the year. The number of meetings depends a little bit on how much work has been done already, so how much we're leaning on existing departmental plans or other specific plans. And in some cases, there's a lot of work that we have to do to kind of get up to speed. Will be a mix of in-person, virtual. Almost likely every in-person meeting will have a virtual option. And then the timing and the frequency and meeting frequency varies according to the size of the group and the tasks at hand. And then after our first meeting, we'll be asking about kind of what are your preferences for scheduling. We are anticipating that all of these meetings will be occurring during business hours. So sometime between 8 and 5 p.m. Although if we're hearing kind of that doesn't work for a working group, then we will adjust accordingly. So I'm here to ask ESAC, as we've asked a couple of other boards and commissions already, to assign or to appoint a liaison to participate with us in the working group perspective. So that includes bringing forth your personal and professional experience, as well as the perspective from the board and commission that you are on to the working group, and then also sharing back with your commission kind of what is the progress that's being made, what are the kind of discussions, and anything that you'd like to, any reflections you'd like to bring back to us, you can always email or call any of the Plan Tucson team to keep us up to date on where your commission is at. Currently, we're just looking for you who's interested. Some groups have gone through a formal appointment process during their meetings. Others have just said, we're all pretty interested, so they all signed up. It kind of depends on how formal you would like to be in this case. And I will stop my screen share and then drop into the chat the link here. Or you can just let me know who among you are interested, and I can add you myself to our invitation list.
Well, we did get an offer from Michael Harrier, raise your hand, and then other people too were interested. So I didn't know that there would be the option for multiple people from the ESAC. So we may have some others that are interested in joining. I think the comments last time had to do with, what time, what days, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That was going to be my challenge, was I need to make sure it's going to fit in with my schedule.
Okay. So we don't have our timing yet, but Mike, if you could share, if you already know what your constraints are, if you can let me know, we can certainly keep that in mind as we are choosing when those kind of first meetings are. Since we will schedule the first meeting, and then at the first meeting, we'll determine kind of when the next meeting will be according to the whole group's availability.
Mm-hmm. And I know, Fred, you were interested. Oh.
To a point, but I'm just kind of a little bit overwhelmed right now. I got a lot of stuff going on.
I understand. Okay.
Well,
yes, Marco.
If we're allowed to put our names in just so we get information about what's going on, and I'm overwhelmed right now too, but I don't know what my schedule will be in September or October, which sounds like when you'll be going. So I would certainly put my name in just for general information.
Yeah, so we can certainly add you to that.
And Margo was also involved with the last.
Great.
Yes, she set them straight on some environmental topics. So.
Yeah.
Right.
I did. I rewrote some major sections of the environmental services section.
Yeah. Well,
thank you for your contribution.
Anyone else have a question? Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I will work with Brittany on kind of getting the contact information for you and make sure that we get that information out to you all when we have it.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you in person.
Yes. Okay. Thanks for your presentation.
Yes, good one. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right. Let's see. I promised Priscilla Lane, who's a finance administrator, that they would be able to go up next for a financial report and update from the business services staff. And I know Carlos mentioned someone else and I didn't catch the name. So please introduce yourself if there's another person.
I will. Hi. Thank you for including me in your meeting today. My name is Maggie Crowdis, and I'm the finance manager here at EGSD, supporting EGSD. I report to Priscilla. She is going to present the financial report that I'm pretty sure you all received. Priscilla, are you on the line?
I am.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Okay. So I'll hand it over to Priscilla so she can walk you through the report.
Hey, thanks, Maggie. Hi, Margo. It's been a few years since I've seen you, worked with you.
Yes.
So I don't know if you have a copy that you can pull up on your screen, or if you want me to try to share mine, I can try to do that as well.
You might as well go ahead and share. Does that make sense? You can, please. Perfect.
That was another department that was not ES. That this
oh,
is
okay.
There it is.
I have lots of departments going on here.
Okay.
Okay, so what I want to bring to your attention is this is a financial review. Can you still see the Excel file?
Yeah.
Okay. This is an overview for fiscal 23. As you can see, hopefully I don't lose too much of this by scrolling. I apologize if it's too small. But the fiscal 23 adopted budget for revenues was $53 million, and the bottom line expenditures was 69.8. It was a planned use, anticipated planned use of fund balance, and most of that was going to be for capital outlay and capital projects. And throughout the fiscal year, we are seeing some changes and a few, I don't want to call them necessarily project delays, but we are having some budget savings in that the projects that originally were slated for this fiscal year are going to be started and completed in future fiscal years. So the actual projection for revenues is $56.5 million, and 7.1 of that is, as Director De La Torre mentioned earlier, is a net between the $8 million that we received as a reimbursement to the Environmental Services Fund from the General Fund from a few years ago from the Westside Development Projects. And then as an overview, the expenditures are coming in less than originally budgeted and anticipated at expected to be 54.5. So between the revenues being higher than anticipated and the expenditures being lower than budgeted and anticipated, we have budget savings of $50 million, but we have a net between the actual cash of about $10 million. So we don't lose those dollars. Those actually stay within the fund and we're able to carry those forward into our fund balance. We do have annual reserves and we set those aside for capital, for landfill closure, post other costs and future needs for the department. So that's the fiscal 23 budget in a nutshell. Do you have any questions on that? Do you want me to go over certain categories? You can certainly look at the charges for services, and I've broken them down here by the residential fees, the commercial fees, the landfill charge that we received at the landfill. But I don't know if you had any questions.
I had a question on the residential. It's quite a bit higher. Is that due to the new rate structure that went into place?
Yes, ma'am. Yep, half a little less than half a year for that. And then the fiscal 24 budget does realize a full year of those higher fees.
Okay. That seemed to be the biggest change was there. The sale of recyclables, are the sale of the trucks, that's not regarding the MRF at all. That's a separate category. It's on line 15.
Oh, no, sale of recyclables, when we sell vehicles, it's going to be on gain of disposal and proprietary assets. And we had a new category, and I'm checking into it because it is what we've always under sale of recyclables, but we've created a new category within our new workday system. So I will probably lump this in into one line for future charts, just so it doesn't look odd because we didn't budget at that level. So these revenues of $524,000 actually should be recorded on this line, but has its own revenue code. I'm showing it as it is in the financial system.
So what is the recycling surcharge?
Let's see if I have those notes. It is the, so they titled it surcharge, but it really is really sale of recyclables. It doesn't say the resale. It just says, and then it went on to say recycling surcharge. So it's part of the, what should be on line 15, but they have the budget system, the new financial system is calling it a recycling surcharge. And let me get you the actual, if you want the actual data, what that was. Hold that up.
Because the number from the MRF is much larger. That's why it seems curious.
Yeah. Yeah, I contacted the water department who oversees the Navaline system today to get more information on it, but let me see if they responded. I don't yet have access. Okay. Reinstated for the Navaline, but no, I can get that for you.
Thank you. I was not knowing what that is.
Yep.
And then under the expenditures, we would see the MRF expense.
No, this is just lumped up by the entire fund. So all of the salaries, all of the commodities, contractual service for the entire environmental services fund.
So the contractual services would hold the MRF.
Yes.
Contractual service.
So I have a question on the general miscellaneous. We had actual of in 22 of 22, well, almost 2.3 million. And we adopted a budget of 1.1. What's the big difference in that number? What's in that number?
Good question. Let me see if I have that in my notes.
In the past, we used to get a breakdown with the subcategories, so we knew what.
No longer in the new finance system, we no longer have sub revenues, but we do have detail. But I don't know that I pulled up the fiscal 22 data. Let me check.
I was just curious.
Yeah. No, I saw that too, but I apologize. I make those notes. I can pull it up. Give me just 1 second. Okay, ADEQ reimbursements for remediation. And then we had a claim, and I heard back from risk management earlier this week, and that was the tune of about $300,000. But basically those, we had like over $500,000 in ADEQ reimbursements.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. I apologize. I should have made that note there because I checked into it and I didn't recall it.
Does anyone else have a question? I just have a quick question because I've been following the mayor and council meetings. And so they just approved the plastic waste diversion and reuse agreement between the City of Tucson and Bifusion Global Incorporated. So I guess a part of the deal is that the City of Tucson is going to prepare the site and construct the building for Bifusion's operations and to a tune of approximately $2.4 million. So will that money come out of EGSD or is there...
I don't know that. I don't know if Carlos is on, if he can respond to that, but I can certainly, I wrote it down and I can certainly know and get back with you, have Brittany get back with you.
Okay. I was just curious as to how that would work because that's a lot of money, but.
Yeah. 2.4. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But thanks. Along those lines, I wanted to give you an update on the 24 remaining budget process. So on the 23rd, the entire city mayor, city manager's recommended budget now becomes tentative adopted. And then after that, June 6th, that tentative adopted becomes the final adopted for fiscal 24. So we're nearing the final stretch on the budget. And then another piece of good news that I wanted to share with you is that when we first implemented Workday, we took a lot of a consultant who has helped implement the system, a lot of their recommendations. And then now that we're seeing how these things come to play and what it really means for the various city departments, specifically for enterprise funds who have cost of service, we're taking a look at some of those personnel programs as we originally grouped a lot of the staff together. And we're going to be going back to the way we used to do it. We will be realigning our personnel, and we will align it so that it reflects the environmental services cost of service studies, and that way we can get better data for the future rate studies.
Excellent.
Yes,
it is. We understand it's been quite a frustrating process through these years.
It's been fun. It's been interesting. It's kept us busy.
I would think so. Okay. Anyone else? Well, thank you, Priscilla.
You're welcome.
Yes. And I guess we'll just end up moving on.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Let's see, where are we? I have so many arrows on our agenda. So I believe we've made it to item 7, subcommittee reports. Margot, do you have one?
Too? Of course.
I bet it's a big one too.
Actually, we had quite an efficient meeting. So
that was, yeah,
it
was
move good. It right along. we met last Wednesday. Trevor Ledbetter, who is a committee member and the head of the U of A Sustainability Office, reported that they're all set for the U of A move out that's actually happening this week. Suburban Miners handles all their on-campus dorms. UA Surplus handles Honors Village. There are bins for reuse, the food, the Office of Sustainability collects that and takes it to the campus food pantry. It'll be all over by May the 12th and all done by the 15th. He will bring the weight of the materials diverted at the next meeting. So they weigh each time they pick stuff up. There's of course the question of who is handling the luxury high rises and other private dorms. And that is unknown right at this time. Usually that's been a problem. And we know that ES puts out additional bins in those areas during this period because they know they gets to be overflowing. Anything to add to that? Trevor, did I cover that?
I think you covered everything there. I will note things seem to be going differently from last year based on reports that I've received. So I'm not super confident that we will meet what we picked up last year. We've actually had two large bins that my office owns go fully missing. They may be in the back of someone's truck in a different state. They may just be somewhere else on campus, but given that those bins are where we do the collection for food in the lobbies of these dorms, it is impacting our collection efforts. So things are really chaotic on campus through the end of tomorrow and graduation. We will have a better idea next week as to how things went, and we'll see. But I don't know what was different this year, but lessons will be learned, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you. Gosh, I'm sorry about missing bins.
A new
level of something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Thievery, something. I'm sorry, temporarily using her. We reviewed the MRF report. There was a 20.3% increase in the tons collected in March over February, and that resulted in an increased payment to the MRF of $19,696 for a total of $122,239. The excess residue surcharge was $13,914 for March. The price for aluminum increased to $1,520 a ton, and a slight increase in number two HDPE pigmented bottles went up to $1,240 a ton. Aluminum still brings in the most amount of monies overall, which was $46,999. And the city now under the new contract, which is in place, is receiving 90% of the MRF revenue from sales per ton. In March, when you looked out at how much it was actually receiving, in March of this year, they got $49.96 per ton compared to February of $43.15 per ton. So that's some increases, mostly a little bit of increase in the types of things that have been collected. The amount collected is always established as a percentage of the total amount that's brought in. And that percentage is established during those audits, which are done every 3 months. So, you know, people could put in more aluminum cans, but we wouldn't really know that, except that we would see it in the total amount of sales. When it's all totaled up in March, the city paid $55.34 per ton delivered to the MRF compared to the $55.85 per ton. So that difference in the cents, 85 in February, 34 in March, is that difference in the prices that they're getting for the materials. So what's interesting to me that even though you see those variations and the variation in the number of tons, the actual cost to the city per ton is, you know, very, very similar. So I think they have seemed to come up with a better way of figuring how much we pay and how much we get back in terms of what's sold. Joseph Montoyo, a supervisor of homeless camps, and Brush and Bulky went over the protocol for the homeless camps. They're still very short-handed and they are busy every day. Last Wednesday, for instance, I had 105 active sites with 5 due to be cleaned up that particular day. They've completed over 540 camp cleanups. Within 7 days, they have 35 more due for cleanups, 18 are overdue. The sites are all mapped and can be viewed in the dashboard for the program. Lots of people are reporting the camps, but the hard part is locating exactly which camp they are talking about. It can be reported by phone or online. So I think the message is they're working on it. It's difficult. And they have those 3 tiers, if you'll remember, 1 where they're abandoned, they just go in and sweep, 2 where there are people still using it. And then the 3rd one, which of highest level, which is the one where they're problem people and they have the police going in with them. We went over customer service issues. The call center is taking 2 to 5 minutes to answer a call and people are in the queue for 10 to 30 minutes. This is not acceptable. They're only answering about 59% of the calls. The rest are abandoned, so people just get tired of waiting. The reason for this poor performance is our memory. Many, Tucson Water, who's running the call center, has lost a lot of staff. They had 95 people answering the phones, and now they're down to about 30. They had a job fair, and they only hired 12 people. Carlos has written some letters of apology to people who have complained directly to him about the poor service. They're trying to hire more. And also we know that it's an issue of training of what the people know so that when you call in and ask a question from the ES perspective, you don't get someone who says they've never heard of it before because they're water people. And we've also continued to have an issue with truck drivers. In September of 2022, there were 194 routes. And if you remember, they were expanded to 200 routes. That resulted, of course, in a shortage of drivers, but the routes were more manageable. And it was actually a request by the drivers themselves that they all have equal number of houses on the routes as opposed to having it slightly skewed according to how far it was down to the landfill and back. ES is working on operational safety with the state police. Commercial, they're talking about safety, commercial license updates, pre-trip training, fatigue, and distracted driving. With the electric trucks coming on in 1 to 1.5 years, there will also be needs some retraining because when the drivers go to get on the trucks, they check out certain kinds of things on them. And all those things will completely change with the electric driver, with the electric trucks. For instance, there's no specific motor to check or gasoline level or air brakes and so forth. So they're starting to think about how that electric trucks are going to impact the drivers and the kind of training they need to run them. They're also undertaking retraining for drivers with recurring accidents. The accidents as a result have dropped by about half. And for instance, we also heard about a case in the Garden District that had a truck that was leaking. They put down an absorbent material and it took about 3 hours to pick it all up. So these things take a while. Frank Benias, who heads up the landfill, reported that the excavation for cell 4 is just about finished. It's on time. And it will be lined before the monsoons comes. He said, now would be a really good time to go see the depth of the cell, how it sloped, and then see that liner being applied. Those of us who've seen it before, it always amazes me the thickness of those liners. You know, they're not like trash bags. They are substantial liners and the way they have to be sealed with heat. We heard about the Los Reales Sustainability Campus open house. And for the tree ceremony, which was the opening of the nursery, there were about 30 to 40 who attended that. Both the mayor and Councilman Kivendall spoke. The irrigation is installed thanks to Parks and Recreation, and they did create a stormwater basin to capture some of the rainwater so that it can be put on the plants, on the trees. Christina Polesgrove reported a very busy April, of course, it being Earth Month. On April 8th was a compost demonstration and a giveaway at the Blue Moon Garden. On the 15th was the zero waste collection. Again, that was very successful. About 450 cars, 6,000 pounds of paper were shredded, scrap metals. Goodwill filled up with clothing, et cetera, and had to go and dump the place they had to store it and come back to some police department, got lots of prescription drugs and medical equipment. And so they're looking forward to doing it then. Again, the church was very happy with it and are happy to continue to be co-sponsors with it. April 22nd was Earth Day at the Children's Museum, and we heard about the landfill. They had volunteers helping at the Zero Waste Day, and they were from the Verde Rotary, which is something I know Kevin Dahl has started and is focused on environmental issues, and the TEP Sustainability Office. Christina reported that they're trying to get Tucson Clean and Beautiful to start up the master recycling program in the fall, so they'll have more volunteers to deal with some of these things. Arizona Recycling Coalition is coming to Tucson for their meeting in June, and all are invited to hear the presentation by Dr. Barbara Eisenworth on Ishikita. I went to the meeting last year, and I really recommend it. I'm going to try very hard to get there this year. So it's about $20 for the lunch, and there are a lot of people from all over the state and locally who are involved in recycling. Code enforcement, the Independent Audit Commission report is finally done. And guess what? They said it needs more staff. Surprise, surprise. The mayor and council have a vans program, which we heard, which is about vacant houses, vacant and abandoned housing. And it was on the agenda on May 2nd. They approved the city manager recommendation for the development of the Len project, which will hopefully speed up the process. So there'll be shorting some of the things that it takes to find a vacant and abandoned houses, getting them handled or torn down. One of the things was that the courts are actually one of the big parts of the bottleneck. The log jam is there. People are breaking into abandoned houses that are not dilapidated and causing problems. The city does have an ordinance already that absentee landlords need to be held accountable, and they need to have a local person that is their contact. So for the city, for the tenants and so forth, and that's not really being enforced in any way. So I think, but you can imagine the work that's involved in trying to follow up on that. Next meeting is June 7th, and we have a request for the agenda for a report on the move out diversion numbers, public outreach, the MRF, the collections landfill, and service level agreements. Anything I forgot, fellow committee members?
Oh, you never forget anything. Oh, well,
I may get it wrong too.
No, thank you. And then maybe for the future, I'm hoping that environmental engineering and finance will have an opportunity to meet this year. So the year is going by quickly. So
I haven't sent out the meeting appointment yet, but the two members on E&E did send me their availability. So we should have a meeting scheduled in June for E&E.
Okay, good.
And regarding finance, that's unfortunately I have to get with the finance staff to schedule that meeting.
Okay. Thanks, Brittany.
Uh-huh.
All right.
And the Arizona Recycling Coalition General Board meeting that will be in June is actually a $25 fee. It include lunch. And we do have a speaker, and you'll get the information and the invitation out with more information about that if you'd like to attend.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move to item 8 for future agenda item. I know, I see that, I think it was it Carlos that put the glass reuse plan update? And is there anything that the committee would like?
I'd like to see some details on the bifusion, like a timeline, when we might expect to see that plant up and moving or up and going. And
okay.
And whether there'll be any changes in the collection procedure. I mean, I just dropped off stuff this afternoon at six, and the thing was stuffed full, and there was a backlog already starting up that was about equal to what a bin would be already piled on the side. And I don't think it's fair to ask the city staff, the Steve's staff, to have to pitch that stuff in. So. Yeah.
And the city's picking up that bin at Ward 6 six times a week.
Yeah. It's tough to me that we need other places to start collecting that. And when the plant is up and running, I'm sure it'll have even more people interested in it. So we're going to need some more places for collection.
Yeah.
In that same vein, I honestly have no idea what happens to the bags when you take them to a grocery store. I would imagine that they would probably maybe shift to bifusion as well. So it'd be good to sort of understand what their overall plan is for getting additional material in.
That's a really good point, Trevor. I was just thinking about that myself, because in the past, the idea was that it was a return trip. But I don't know where the plants are that they're taking to them. I knew there was one in Virginia when I was back there, but that's a long way from Arizona. So it would make more sense to do bifusion.
Yeah.
Maybe in a couple of months when things have settled a little bit with bifusion, they can come and talk to us about what their grander scheme is, how they're going to, are they going to go to Phoenix and start collecting stuff or just from us? Or, what is their business model?
Okay. Anyone else?
That'd be a good idea.
All right. This has been a busy meeting. Item 9, there is, I believe, no call to the audience. And so let's move right along to item 10, adjournment. It's 5:19, and we got out of here early. So have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you all.